to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Thursday, June 19th, 2014. I'm Sam Minter, and for the first time in like a couple years, Yvonne Bo is with us. Hello, Yvonne.
A couple of years. Give me a fucking break.
So first of all, before anything else, how's your house? For those of you who've been listening, there was some sort of flooding thing and all kinds of damage. And
look, look, I live in a building that has a fire sprinkler system. Okay, all right, and something, a pipe unrelated to the system that was for some, it was for venting. The pipe collapsed for reasons we still don't understand. And it fell on top of the fire sprinkler system pipe. Now, a fire sprinkler system pipe is meant to pump approximately 100 gallons a minute. Okay?
Okay.
So my wife and my son were taking a nap. I was at the AT&T store actually buying a phone for my niece as a graduation gift when I get this frantic call from my wife that says, "Honey, there is water coming out of everywhere." And I'm like, is there a fire? I'm thinking the sprinklers, right? Okay, is there a fire? No. Is it coming out of sprinklers? No. Everywhere. And I'm like, I don't really understand what the hell that means, but I drive very quickly home. I get home, and the way that the fire system worked, despite the fact that it hadn't been a fire, it actually did set off a call to the fire department. The fire department got there right in front of me as I pulled into the house and I walked to the front of my condo, which my condo, there's a stairwell that leads to it. There is basically a massive waterfall coming out of the front of my condo.
Oh, nice.
Okay. I mean, a massive waterfall. I mean, I should have, but I was just so... At that moment, I should have pulled out my phone and videotaped it, because I think everybody would have found that quite interesting. But I
probably
did not.
Yep.
Yep. But I did not take the moment to film my moment.
Because you were sort of thinking about other things.
What the hell do I do? Okay, you know. I got in, and my neighbor actually, my wife had come down, going downstairs with my neighbor, and my neighbor was actually trying to help the situation, which he did very, very, very much. Thankfully, you know, probably because of him, the damage was not as extensive as it could have been. But bottom line is, I had quite a lot of damage, and I have not been, this Saturday will be 4 weeks that I have not been living in my house.
Are you doing a hotel or what?
I mean, the house I used to live in before, where my parents actually live.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So I am in the room that I live in.
And by you, you mean your whole family, I presume, right?
Well, yeah, myself, my wife, and my son. So we're, you know, now I think like over here we've gotten somewhat situated. I mean, I was traveling also for work. Like, I mean, at once this thing started, I mean, I had a whole bunch of business trips, and I have been traveling for work, like, nonstop. So that didn't really help. Now, I did manage to get a contractor, thankfully, because I am on my condo association. I happen to know contractors pretty well and got people to start working as soon as could be realistic. But, I mean, look, thankfully, it's the work has progressed. It's still not there. The main problem that we've got is basically that a whole bunch of the kitchen cabinets had to be redone. Mm-hmm. And the microwave and stove were shot.
Yep.
During this thing. So we're waiting to get the replacements to the cabinets, and then to be able to, after the cabinets go in, to put the appliances where they should be.
But do you have, like, damaged, like, floors and walls and that kind of
floors,
stuff,
too? Floors, walls, ceilings, you know.
Now, are you taking the opportunity to, like, put in things that were better than what were there before, or do you just replace
things? I did, for example, one of the things that I did do, by the way, is replace, like, that, because so many of the hi-hats had to come down, and I'm replacing them all with LED lights.
Okay.
So I did take the opportunity to do that. which, you know, I was like, well, he's like, so the guy, the contractor's like, well, we're going to take out the hi-hats. You want to put in LEDs? And I'm like, well, fuck yeah. You know? So I'm doing that, and I'm doing a few other things like that. And I mean, we're going to paint half the place. So I said, well, fuck it, paint the whole fucking place.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's stuff like that, but it was like, well, I mean, if we're going to paint, I mean, might as well, you know, just finish the whole place. But the thing is that at this point, because of all of this stuff, the place looks like it's been firebombed. Okay. Right. Let me just, you know, I'm basically going to come back in to move back in. It's basically like I almost moved back in for the first time.
Right.
It's
like an empty apartment.
Not totally, but it's just that everything is like out of, you know, all the dishes were taken out of the kitchen cabinets. Like quite a lot of things had to be taken down from the walls. All the furniture is moved. I took down a lot of my clothes. We have to take out a whole bunch of our personal effects and stuff. I mean, so yeah, I mean, it's just a freaking nightmare. And you guys can probably tell from my voice, I am exhausted. I'm just between the work and the travel and the thing and the whatever. And finally, my son actually at least is getting back to his sleep schedule. For one of the reasons why I've not been able to do the show is because my son, ever since, I mean, up until like this weekend, was not getting to sleep until midnight.
Right.
Ever since we left our house. There was no way
that
we could get our son to sleep before midnight.
Because this undoubtedly is a fairly traumatic experience for him, too. You know?
Yes,
All of the normal routines completely thrown out the window, and the house gone. Is going crazy, and you don't know what to trust anymore. And yeah.
Right, yeah. So he had not been going to sleep before midnight, which made it quite difficult for me to get to do the show. Because my wife had been taking care of my son all day, and then to go, like, say, well, let me go, like, record a show, and I'm like, you know, it's like, just didn't really work. So, I mean, we were struggling to get him to bed, but I actually managed to get him to bed at a reasonable time today at 10:15, which yep. is, you know, I'm getting closer back to, you know, to normal on that respect. You know, so yeah, it's been exhausting.
So how much longer until, like, how many more weeks until it's, like, all done and it's back to normal?
Listen, here's the thing. A couple of days ago, the contractor told me 2 weeks. But he told me 2 weeks, 2 weeks before. I'm not sure. I don't know.
It's one of these things where it's always 2 weeks in the future.
Yeah, close to that. So I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm going to guess 2 to 3 weeks. Because even if I get back to 2 weeks, you know, I got to go back and put everything back in its place.
Right.
So, you know. So that's pretty much it. I mean, I gotta finish, and then I gotta move back in.
So this is lots of fun, and you'd recommend it to all your friends and acquaintances.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like if you can do this to your house, you should go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Uh huh. Anyway, I guess we'll get to a real show in a second. We got a few things on the agenda. Obviously, Iraq. We're going to talk about Iraq. There was this capture of the guy responsible for the Benghazi stuff. We'll talk about that a little bit. And since Yvonne's been gone a while, we'll do a little catch-up, and we'll get Yvonne's take on the Cantor loss and some of the Apple news for the last couple weeks. And he may have something to say about a phone from some other company, I don't know, too, and maybe some other random stuff. But let's take a break at this point, and we'll come back, and we'll start hitting some of those other things. Back after this.
Yeah.
And here we are. So, Yvonne, you mentioned you're tired. I just wanted to, you know, I tweeted about this, or I actually posted a blog post about it. But I actually did an actual all-nighter last night. Like, I did not sleep last night.
That's crazy. I haven't done one.
In many years,
and I'm gonna. It was sometime when I worked at HP that I did one. I'm gonna say he was in. Well, let me take that back. It wasn't that long. I probably did a couple, especially when I was traveling a lot for I'm gonna say 2004.
Okay,
10 years ago.
Wow, that's a long time. See, I'll tell you, like, I probably still do two or three of them a year.
Really?
Yeah. Now, I think it's been exceptionally rare that I've done one for like work or anything. I usually am doing it for. My wife just brought me a computer mouse, a little tiny one. It's exceptionally rare that I would do anything like that for work, although it has happened. Normally it's because it's like a personal project I want to do that, because, you know, there's always stuff going on in the daytime and the kid's awake or the wife's here or I have to work or whatever. I'll get started on something at like 11 o'clock. And then I'll be like on a roll and I'll want to finish it and I'll just keep going until I'm done. And then I look up and, oh, the sun's up and I have to go to work. That's how it usually happens to me.
Like, yeah.
And that's what happened last night. I mean, I essentially started on a project at like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And when I finally finished the last bit of the project, it was just after 5 a.m., and it was time to, like, get in a shower and get ready to go to work. Because I had an 8 o'clock in the morning meeting.
Wow. Well, that's...
And the one thing is, though, like, I do these a few times a year, but, you know, I'm 42. I'm definitely getting too old for this shit. You know?
It's one of these things. Like, I managed
to actually be functional at work all day long today, but, you know, I made sure I took the bus. I didn't drive because I knew it would be dangerous for me to drive. And now, like, I'm on fumes. Like, when we get done with this, my wife's going to try to feed me dinner and then I'm just going to collapse.
Oh boy. Well, do you drink coffee?
Not anymore. I haven't drunk anything with caffeine for a couple years now.
I mean, nothing with caffeine, not even a Coke?
Nope, no Cokes, no, nothing with caffeine. There's limits. Like, I will eat chocolate. Chocolate has caffeine in it in small amounts. But no, no coffee, no tea, no caffeinated tea, nothing like that. So no.
Hmm. Well, that makes it a lot tougher to go and slog through a day after that, I'll tell you that.
Well, you know, it's like, you know, I stopped it because basically I was doing all the sugary coffee drinks.
And like everything. You went overboard on those fuckers.
Well, and I had lots of those, and I'd have one or two big ones a day. And then I was like, I don't need this shit, and I stopped that. But when I first stopped it, I immediately replaced it with soda. And, like, after a little bit, I'm like, you know, I don't need this either. So I stopped that too. And, you know, the first couple weeks were hard, but after that, I've never missed it. Occasionally on days like today, I'd be like, oh, caffeine would be nice. But, you know, this time I didn't even think it. It's been long enough. The thought never even crossed my mind.
I mean, there are people that do that, I guess. I don't know.
Anyway, let's get on to real stuff. Let's start with the new stuff so that people who've had enough of Apple and Cantor can, you know, stop listening at the appropriate point in a thing. But let's talk about Iraq first and then the Benghazi stuff. So in the last week, Iraq just exploded.
Well, let me ask a question. Has McCain already said that he wants us to go back in and declare war? No.
McCain was indeed making some aggressive comments.
He did.
Then apparently, and this was interesting to me, apparently he had a phone call with the White House. And after the phone call, he was like, I actually feel a bit more comfortable now. He didn't say what they told him.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, no. So the main theme of this, okay, is apparently all of a sudden, but you know, for if you were really paying close attention, you knew this was simmering for a while, and I wasn't paying close attention, but those who were knew this was simmering. But all of a sudden, this ISIS group, which is the group that came out of Al Qaeda in Iraq, took over a major chunk of Iraq, including the city of Mosul. And which is the second largest city in Iraq. And then all of a sudden, everybody's like, what the hell just happened? On the one hand, you have all of the sort of people who were all pushing the Iraq war back in 2003 are all like, oh, my God, this shows what a big mistake it was to get out of Iraq. And we need to get back in and we need to
get back in so we could just live there, for God's sakes. I'm sorry. The whole fucking reason why this happened is because basically we pushed Saddam out of power. Let's get into game. We didn't like Saddam. We fucking threw him out. We created chaos. There was nothing to replace it. The reality is that as much as I didn't like Saddam, and as much as he was a prick, okay, because he was, basically what he kept was that fucking place under an iron fist from going into what is happening right now. We fucking took it off, and now this is what we got.
Well, and you know, all of that. And all of this stuff in terms of you know, the whole surge and everything, it was never enough to actually, like, if you wanted to prevent the kinds of things that have been happening, you either would have had to fully replace Saddam with all of what that meant in terms of imposing order, excuse me, which would have taken a lot more than we were willing to put in there. Or something like, there's been a lot of talk in the last few days about, like, hey, Biden was right, you know, because if you remember in the 2008 campaign and even before, Biden was talking about, hey, if we want to have any chance whatsoever in Iraq, you know, we have to set up some sort of federal state where these three major groups can get out of each other's way.
And he may be totally right,
you know, and, but look, bottom line here, all of these folks who are like,
well, let's think about this. For example, Yugoslavia, right?
Yes.
How was peace achieved there?
There was massive war for a while, lots of ethnic cleansing, and then everybody got into their own little areas. Then, you know, there was nothing left to fight
the country.
About. Yeah, they ended up with a partition, and
the borders that were made for Iraq, Syria, Iran, all of these were fucking arbitrary.
Yep.
So why not redraw them? Fuck it.
Yeah, look, I mean, here's my bottom line on this, to be honest. I tweeted some of this when it came out, and it probably should have been a blog post because I did like 10 consecutive tweets or something. But look, I see absolutely zero, zilch evidence that us getting more deeply involved, even just with airstrikes, let alone anything more, would actually help a damn thing, you know, and more likely it would make things worse. So my take on all of this is like, look, we probably have a good deal to do with why things are the way they are because of our invasion and the way we handled it and the way it was completely botched. However, at this point, the best thing we can possibly do is just stay the hell out of it. Let whoever's going to fight. Let them do their thing. Don't go in there supplying arms or support to one side or another. Just get the hell out. Let the region figure itself out, which unfortunately may mean, you know, many, many years of war. But we're not going to make it better. And as much as we might want to say that we can sort of pick and say, well, this is the outcome we prefer because it would be most friendly to American interests, and therefore we're going to try to engineer things to go in that direction, that's bullshit. We don't have that kind of control, and us meddling is just going to... It is just going to screw things up worse in one way or another through unintended consequences. Best thing to do, get the fuck out, let it all go, and yes, it will go to hell, and then hope for the best when it all comes out on the other end in another decade, or two, or three.
There, maybe.
And, you know, I don't know. I don't get the interventionists here. I understand the sort of desire to, hey, we don't want to let the bad guys win, but they're all bad guys.
Hey, these are the same fucking morons, okay, that went and thought that, what was it, the Jeffersonian democracy was just going to break out because we fucking, like, got rid of Saddam, right? Were these the same bozos? And now, you know, it's like, oh my God, we haven't taken any forceful action now. What the fuck is the forceful action we're supposed to take? Go back to war? And we're going to do what? Go back to the same situation we were like 10 years ago?
And I think as much as people are getting pissed at him and indicating, well, he's so weak, blah, 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 Obama is so far taking the right tack on this, which is, well, first of all, he said the official word right now is no decisions have been made. They're taking the time to think about it. And so item number one, that's not a bad thing. You know, taking some time to make sure you understand what the hell's going on before you do anything. Okay, that makes sense. Second, it seems fairly, it looks like he's leaning against taking any sort of overt military action. So much the better. So I'm like, you know, I obviously disagree with Obama on quite a lot in terms of what he's done in a lot of areas. But I think this is one area where, he's being conservative in the traditional sense of the word. He's not, he's being calm and collected and looking at the situation and only doing whatever involvement seems absolutely necessary. The other interesting thing that's been talked about here is cooperation with the Iranians. Because the Iranians also hate this ISIS group. And so there's room to sort of do some maneuvering there and perhaps some coordination. And, you know, I would want to be very careful along those lines in that although it would be nice to use this as an opportunity to further improve what's going on with Iran, I'm just wary of taking sides at all. I think we really need to just stop. And I mean, we ended up in the right place in Syria because I don't think us getting involved would have helped there, and it's not going to help here. And I don't know. I'm going to just repeat myself. So your turn, Yvonne. Talk.
My turn. I was thinking. You know, going back a little bit to what the current situation is, right, and how it arrived. I was remembering the other day, you know, we pulled out, right? And so the Maliki government didn't want us they offered a security deal. They didn't want it, right? So we said, well, fuck you, fine. You don't want us? Fine, we're leaving. Here we go. Pack it up. Let's get the fuck out.
And right? One thing I should mention there, a number of people at the time were like, if we pull out, the reason to stay in was to essentially continue to sort of prop up the situation. Correct. But if we pull out, there'll be violence and the situation will deteriorate. And I think, and there, I read somewhere this week that there were a number of polls taken at the time that most Americans believed if we left that the situation would go to hell. But most Americans also believed we should leave anyway.
Right. And if you recall, you know, I don't know. What happened when we pulled out of Vietnam?
The North won?
Yeah, and you know, there was significant chaos for a period of time. The North won, took over, and boom. I mean, but the reality is that we may have been propping up a situation in Iraq that was unsustainable in the long run in the first place, and all we were going to do is, like, just basically stay there forever. And
if you remember, that's what the neocons wanted. I mean, John McCain said we should be in there for 100 years.
Well, that's all fine and dandy for him. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't want to be there for 100 years. We don't have the money for this shit.
And there's only so long, like, when you're doing the, and I think one of the things that we've seen in this situation is where we've had, you know, a peace kept by force. And you mentioned Yugoslavia. It's a perfect example. The peace was kept by force by the power of a dictator for decades. As soon as he's gone, it explodes. You know, and I think you have the similar situation here where, okay, let's say we did stay for 80 years. As soon as we got the hell out, maybe everything goes right back where it was. I mean, maybe in an extended period of time like that, you could build a whole new culture or something. But, you know, you can only keep peace by force for so long. To get real peace, the parties on the ground have to, of their own free will, get to the point where they have figured out a solution, whatever that solution may be. And we should be under absolutely no illusions, by the way. And if you hear anybody say anything different about Afghanistan, they're full of it. You know, we're going to get out of Afghanistan, and the current Afghani government, I guess Karzai is on his way out because they're having an election or whatever, but, you know, whatever the official sort of American propped up government there is going to be gone in 6 months to a year, and the Taliban are going to be back in charge of Afghanistan. And
I actually don't know if the Taliban will get back in.
They'll get part of it. It'll be chaos.
They'll have certain areas. It's kind of the same thing as with ISIS, the same thing that's happening over.
Yeah, I mean, look, but the bottom line is a lot of things are going to go to hell. We're going to get out anyway.
Right.
You know, and, you know, there was an interview with Karzai or whatever saying, you know, will the Iraqi scenario happen in Afghanistan when the Americans leave? And of course, he's like, no, of course not. Yeah, bullshit, whatever. You know, if of course, it's not going to be exactly the same. But, you know, that is another example of a government that cannot survive without external help. And so if we're done, you know, everything's going to fall to hell. And the thing is, we can't artificially impose an unwanted order indefinitely. Like, at some point, you have to take your hands off the controls, see what happens. And yeah, the only way you'll eventually get to a stable situation is if it originates on the ground with the people there. And, you know, unfortunately, and we see this, you know, in Israel-Palestine and all this kind of stuff, that can take a long, long time. Of course, you can argue that Israel-Palestine is also being propped up by external influences on all sides of that conflict.
But there's quite a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, you know, at a certain point, like, you know, things just, you can't fix everything. And certainly you can't fix everything by raining down smart bombs and drones and, you know, airstrikes. I mean, no, it's not going to help. It only fans the fires. So if you're going to do anything, you know, to use the fire analogy more, starve the fire, take the oxygen out of the equation, you know, do an embargo on weapons to the area, you know, do that kind of thing. But it just frustrates me. And, you know, OK, we're worried about this becoming a, you know, new hotbed for terrorism that's going to be exported to the U.S. OK, maybe, you know, wouldn't be surprised, but there's, I don't know that there's anything in particular that's useful that we could do about it right now. Whereas if they're left to their own devices here, they're going to be preoccupied with local concerns for quite a while. And who knows what will happen at the point where they're ready to look outward again.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I got to look. Bottom line is that I think you agree. Getting in there again is not going to fix anything.
That's insane. And I hope Obama continues to resist any notions along those lines. You know, the only thing I could see even being remotely interesting here is if we ended up with some sort of alliance with the Iranians, which would be the weirdest thing in a long time. But, you know, but there have been weirder. But even that, I think, is, you know, it might have some positives, but there are all kinds of unintended consequences that could come out of that, too, and all kinds of danger there. So I think the right answer is stay the hell out as much as possible and just watch whatever unfolds from a distance. Containment.
Containment. That's about it. We got to monitor. We got to make sure. But, I mean, here's the thing that today pissed me off, right? So we're talking about the security deal, right? And how they didn't want to go with the damn thing, right?
Yeah.
So now, what's his name? Maliki today asked that we do airstrikes. And I'm like, really, asshole? I mean,
General Schwarzkopf, if you remember him from the first Gulf War, beep, beep, beep. This is Sam from the future. General Schwarzkopf actually died in December 2012 at age 78. So he is obviously not giving quotes about the current situation in Iraq that I'm about to give. The quote I gave was not from General Schwarzkopf. I was mixing him up with a different general. In fact, it was General Petraeus who gives the quote I'm about to give. Sorry for the confusion. Back to the show. Beep, beep, beep. Was quoted saying something along the lines of, we can't allow the U.S. to be drawn in to be Malachi's Air Force.
Yeah.
Malachi, however you say
his name. Well, however the fuck you say his name. Fuck him. I'm like, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, but we put a deal on the table for you to do this. You fucking told us to go away.
Well, and remember, one of the main sticking points was whether or not the Iraqi government could try Americans who committed crimes while they were in Iraq, and we were like, absolutely not. You know that you don't have that ability. If Americans do something bad, we'll deal with it. And you know, you can understand why that would be a sticking point, because there was a history of the American soldiers doing things that they weren't supposed to while they were in Iraq.
I get that. I mean, and I understand that concern, but I think that I think there could have been ways to address that. That it wasn't. Let's face it. I wouldn't want them tried in Iraq myself either. But I think that there probably would have been ways to meet somewhere halfway,
right?
In order to deal with that.
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But the point is, you can understand why the Iraqis would have wanted us out.
I agree. But if you also remember, it's still. I don't know. Yeah, look, I think here. I mean, I guess the whole thing about it is that he needed that deal more than we needed it. This was really. Look at what's the situation right now. What was the purpose of that deal? Was to keep his government and the structure was set up stable. And he didn't want it.
And look, a lot of people disagree with him and can't believe he meant it and can't believe he's doing it. But the bottom line is, central pillars of what Obama said when he was elected in 2008 and reelected in 2012 are, we are getting the hell out of Iraq, we are getting the hell out of Afghanistan, and we're not going to increase our entanglement elsewhere as much as possible. And that's exactly what he's been doing. It's been a lot slower than he initially promised, but he's been pulling out of the areas he said he'd be pulling out with. There was that little, I think it was a misstep in Libya. He shouldn't have gotten involved with Libya. And this whole Benghazi thing that we'll talk about in a second, to a large degree, came because of that. And I think that was a mistake. But for the most part, he's been very much sticking with what he said before he became president and trying to extract ourselves from all of these positions across the globe, Iraq and Afghanistan being the two major ones, and avoiding getting us entangled in other places. And I think that's exactly the right approach to be taken. You know, if anything, I think he's more entangled than he should be in some places, but he's clearly sticking with that approach that he gave, which, you know, if we look at, you know, if we look at potential candidates for 2016, and I'm not going to turn this into a 2016 conversation, but, you know, Hillary's going to be more interventionist than Obama was. You know, most of the Republicans, with the exception of Rand Paul, are going to be more interventionist than Obama. You know, this is a somewhat minority position amongst both Democrats and Republicans to sort of be, you know, maybe the right answer is to do nothing. And I give him a lot of credit for actually being courageous enough to actually do nothing and take all the criticism he gets for doing nothing, when in fact that may well be the most prudent way forward, to use George H.W. Bush's quote.
Wow.
And I think, and actually that's a good, I think Obama's foreign policy most resembles George H.W. Bush's than any of the presidents in between.
Yes, I would agree. And I think that, you know, there was this major policy statement that he did in regarding our foreign policy and where we're at. And a lot of people have been ripping Obama for the current foreign policy because of the situation in the Middle East and so forth and so on. But I mean, come on, guys. I mean, look, yeah. So our policy right now has been basically to get the fuck out.
Yeah. And I think
I'm like, we were in a policy like 10 years before where we got the fuck in. What the hell did that do?
Well, and one of the things you see that's very interesting, like, you get a lot of people criticizing Obama for being ineffectual this, ineffectual that, blah, blah, blah. And they're fundamentally judging him against something that he's not acting against, because they're saying, okay, he's ineffectual if your goals are X, Y, and Z. But guess what? Those aren't his goals. His goals are get the hell out.
Yeah. Our goals are to just get the fuck out and not have our military deployed in an area where we're not being able to do anything. And a few people have argued that that Putin is supporting this, and because it drives the price of oil up, and it is in his interest to foment this, and that may all be true. But
it's true, but I wouldn't be shocked.
But the thing is that I don't think that the reaction is for us to go into war over there and like do that.
And well, and there's this fundamental impulse that we've talked about before, to do something, or to, you know, be strong, be aggressive, and you'll show them. And I think it's, you know, in the end, come on, like, you don't just do something to do something. You do something if there's a reasonable chance that that action is actually going to end in a result that's going to be helpful. And I think that's the kind of calculation that Obama's actually doing, is saying, oh, okay, you know, he could, like, at a moment's notice say, okay, we're going in, let's do some airstrikes. But what the fuck good would it do?
Not much. Maybe he'll push him back for a little bit.
A show of force. But does it actually achieve anything? Does it achieve any military goals? Even if it rolls them back, do we end up making more enemies? Do we do this? Show me a path that says that this action actually, in by any measure you pick, by number of people dead or by how pro-American the people are on the ground or whatever measure you pick, show me a path that says that this actually helps get us there. And I don't see it. And maybe somebody sees it, but I have not heard anybody articulate, you know, okay, how would intervention here actually improve the situation? What would you do that makes things better? You know, the people who are arguing intervention, for the most part, are just saying, you know, we have to intervene because we have to do something because these are bad guys and we can't let the bad guys go unchecked. Okay, fine, but what will the actual result of what you're proposing be, and how is that better? And it seems like that's a perfectly reasonable question to ask. And the people who are pro-intervention typically don't answer that question and don't even ask it. because it's all about just, proving your manhood or something, and proving that you're the bigger, stronger guy in some way, and you can push people around, and I don't know, stupid. Shall we move on?
Yes, we can.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back after this and talk a little bit about this Benghazi thing.
Information.
And we're back. Okay, Yvonne, like I admitted earlier that I sort of noted that this had happened, but I haven't read up on it. I haven't paid attention. What the hell happened here? We grabbed some guy off the street that was responsible for the embassy thing in Benghazi a couple years back?
I guess. I mean, it says that, they grabbed him. I was actually, trying to find something more detail about it, but I haven't been able to find much other than the headline, to be honest with you.
I mean,
I guess Benghazi is never going away. I mean, I don't know.
Well, and there has been some talk, apparently, like, this guy was not in hiding or anything. We've known the guy's name. We've known he was involved. He's done interviews with the Western press where he admitted being involved. It was just a matter of apparently getting all the pieces in place to grab him.
Okay.
And he's being brought back, I guess, to D.C. To face charges. So they're not sending him to Guantanamo. Probably a good thing. He'll be put on trial. Now, and I guess, and not that we've played fast and loose with applying American laws overseas, like with Panama and such. But in this case, I guess the argument is the consulate is American soil, so American laws apply in the consulate grounds, which is where this happened.
Right.
Would that make sense? Is that so?
I guess.
And so another one of the things you've heard on this is the same people who've been bitching about the Benghazi cover-up are also bitching about, and now we're getting him right now. What's up with the timing of this? We could have grabbed him at any time, and there must be something political for why we're grabbing him now.
Jesus, for God's sakes. I mean, I'm just so fed up with this crap. I mean, okay, so great. So we don't grab him, it's bad. We grab him, it's bad. Right, I guess?
That's right. Well, here's the thing. If Obama is responsible for grabbing him, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line. If it was a couple years down the line and, we had President Santorum or something and he grabbed him, that would be just fine.
Great. Okay. I guess.
Okay, so it sounds like we don't have much else to say about this part.
No, we don't. I mean, the guy is caught. I mean, I don't know. And apparently, what I read a little bit was he's going to a civilian trial.
Right.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, that's the way it freaking should be,
Yes.
And if we can't prove our case against him, then, we should leave him alone.
Yep, I totally agree.
And, okay, So enough on that. And before we move on to Cantor and then Apple, the one other new thing, which I am going to keep my mouth completely shut on, but you mentioned that there's a certain company that might have released a phone today. Feel free to talk about it for 5 minutes. I'm going to, you know, go sit
5 minutes. I don't know if I'm going to talk that long, but I just think it's just one of these things. I'm like, why? I'm like, a phone now? Why? I will say one thing. I remember when I worked at HP, we launched a lot of phones, and they were quite unsuccessful. Okay, all right. It was comical. They were comically unsuccessful. And at some point, basically to get rid of the inventory, we decided to give them all to employees as company phones. I mean, what the fuck else are we gonna do? So I have a whole bunch. I still have somewhere a whole bunch of HP phones, and they all suck. So I guess I'm gonna expect at some point, probably when this thing doesn't sell too well, that there's gonna be a lot of Amazon employees walking around with a Fire phone. That's about the only thing I can say about that.
And as tempting as it is, I'm gonna keep my mouth shut, and we'll move on to something else.
Okay. All right. So Apple.
How about Apple? Let's do Cantor first.
Oh, Cantor. Yes.
So I talked about Cantor with our guest Bruce a couple weeks ago. So I'm not going to repeat myself. What are your thoughts on the whole thing?
I think that the election had more to do with local politics in Cantor's district than anything on a national basis that we want to read into it. That's what it seems like to me. It just seemed like, you know, a number of people there just thought that Cantor was just spending a lot of time in fucking Washington doing a whole bunch of national stuff and not really giving a shit about what the hell is a local district. I think that's what it seemed like to me when I was reading a little bit through what people said after the results. Okay. I don't know what your thought on it was. Do you think that it sent some other message politically?
I think, you know, look, it's the message it sent nationally is not so much about what happened in that election. It's that regardless of what happened in the election, it scared a whole lot of Republicans. And so their behavior is going to change. There was already very, very slim areas where anybody was considering any cooperation whatsoever. And the rest of those just evaporated because people are more afraid than they were. Now, is that justified or not? I'm not sure it fully is, because I think you're right. There's a lot of local stuff. What I mentioned was I think there's a lot of it has to do with the fact that, turnout is exceptionally small in these things. People weren't paying much attention, including Cantor himself, which is why he got screwed. They can be very unpredictable. And, you know, there was very little polling. The polling that there was awful. And it's because the dynamics of these primary races in off-year elections for the House are about the most volatile things you can possibly think of when there's something going on. Now, the other thing is people take them for granted, though, because, you know, there's like, what, a 96-97% incumbent retention rate. So for the most part, people don't pay attention. I mean, no one bothered really digging into this race and figuring out what was going on. Because everybody assumed it was a slam dunk.
Exactly. That's what everybody thought.
And also, because everybody assumed it was a slam dunk, the people who actually supported this guy probably didn't bother coming to the polls because they're like, whatever. You know, he's going to win. There's no reason I should bother voting. Whereas the people who hated him were still motivated to vote. And that's why you get these kind of dynamics. You know, if you had, on the other hand, if you had for a couple weeks before the election, all kinds of press about how it's close and how he was in trouble and blah, 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 he actually probably would have won because his people would have come out.
But he They may have. Yeah, I guess. But but he won by, he lost by such a big margin. I don't know if it would have made a difference. I mean,
I think the thing is, like, you know, the entire, you know, it was like, I believe that the number of people who voted against him, somebody quoted, is something like 5% of the people in his district.
5%. Yeah, but of the is the Republicans?
No, total, but this is a very highly Republican district. So let's assume it's 60, 70, 80% Republicans. It's still, you know, like maybe 10% of them bothered to vote. You know, and so in things like this, it's all about turnout. It's all about getting your people out. And, you know, he paid no attention to that. And meanwhile, you know, other people were showing up. There's been a few things about whether there were Democrats crossing over and causing it. And I've seen a couple analysis say that it did make a there was some of that going on, but not enough to make the difference, you know. Mm. And it was mostly other factors. Like what you said, people being pissed about the fact he wasn't paying attention, but, and I am repeating myself from a couple weeks ago, but like the real answer is, I don't think anyone will ever know exactly what happened because there were no exit polls either. Nobody was asking these people what they were thinking when they were voting. And any sort of after the fact poll you could do now, is going to be, you know, distorted by the results that happened and everything that people have been saying. So I don't think you'll ever know exactly what happened here, other than I think the bottom line is everybody took the fact that he was winning for granted, and therefore this came as a shock. If they'd been paying attention, it probably wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, no. I agree with you. I mean, I find it so hard to believe, but yet I guess it's what he did, that he just took it for granted as a slam dunk himself.
Yep, I think that's it.
I mean, he just did.
And of course, there was all that Twitter conversation going on afterwards about looking at the campaign finance records for the two campaigns. Cantor spent almost as much on steakhouses for his campaign as the other guy spent on his entire campaign.
That's wow. On steakhouses. Oh, damn. Wow.
Anyway, okay. Before we move on to Apple, one more politics thing that I've been meaning to mention a little bit for the last couple weeks, but haven't, which is, Hillary on her book tour and her interviews and all of this kind of thing. The one thing I want to mention here is the one thing I've noticed over and over again as I go through these things is she's out of practice. She's rusty. She's making mistakes. She's doing things that, you know, sort of stupid little comments that people can get on her. And of course, this is why you start this process so early, so you can get this all out of your system, get the practice back in before it really starts mattering.
But I think it's a little bit more than that. I mean, I just think that, you know, it's like right now, one of the things is that Obama's approval ratings are very, very low.
Yep.
And she was part of the administration, and she's probably going to get a lot more heat than expected because of how low the approval ratings are.
She is, and part of her mission for the next 2 years is to create daylight between her and administration. So you should look for more and more places where she positions herself separately from the administration, disagreeing with what Obama is doing. That's part of what we expect to see over the next 2 years. But no, I think it's, yeah, you know, there's also the fact, as I've been seeing her on TV, you know, I've been like, oh yeah, that's why I didn't like her. You know? So I think she got a lot of really positive, you know, and you and I talked about it, like, you know, seeing her, and neither one of us were Hillary Clinton fans in 2008. Much the opposite, in fact. But when she was Secretary of State, you and I were both talking, you know, she's done pretty well as Secretary of State. She's done a good job. And, you know, okay, maybe we should give her another shot. Maybe she's grown, blah, blah, blah. But when you start seeing her back into this sort of mode, and yeah, it's officially a book tour, but get real, it's the beginning of her campaign. It starts to remind you that the certain bits of what she does that are a little bit grating or a little bit off key, show up again. And so, you know, this is, you know, I as I've done my little poll stuff, you know, she's way ahead. But this is a key reminder that once you actually get into the thick of it, things change. Now, she may still have a big advantage coming in against most of the Republicans in the field, but she's not invulnerable by any means whatsoever. There's all kinds of weaknesses that Hillary has. There are all kinds of things that you can attack her on from all sorts of directions. You can attack her because she's not liberal enough. You can attack her because she's too liberal. You can attack her because she screwed up various things in foreign policy.
Oh, actually, a lot of people on the left think she's way too conservative.
No, exactly. Yeah, you know. And so you can get from all sides here. So she is I don't know that she'll get it. I don't think she'll get a serious challenge on the Democratic side if she decides to run. I still think if she wants it, she's got it. And I think she wants it unless something comes up in the next year to stop her. But once she's up against Republicans, there's a whole other dynamic there. And she does have a lot of vulnerabilities. I think the Democrats have sort of an inherent structural advantage going in. But Hillary certainly has the ability to screw that up.
Yep.
You know, and so if the Republicans actually nominate somebody who is not a joke, then, you know, it can be a very competitive race. I'll stick with what I said a few weeks ago. If I had to give her odds of being the next president, I give her 60% odds right now, which, you know, is high, but by no means inevitable.
So wait a minute. You said 60%.
I believe there is at this moment, if I had to give a percentage, I'd say there's a 60% shot that Clinton is our next president.
60%.
Yeah. So over 50, but not overwhelmingly over 50.
40, gosh, you know what?
40%.
I'm going to go on a limb. I'm going to go lower at this point. You know what I'm going to go? I'm going to go with like about 25%.
You think there's only a 25% shot that Hillary's our next president?
Yeah.
So what do you think is the scenario here? Do you think something happens and she doesn't run? Do you think something happens and she loses the Democratic nomination? Or do you think the Republicans put up someone good and they beat her?
Mm-hmm.
Which of those three things do you think is the likely scenario there?
You see, I still think the Republicans, you know, given like you look at the Cantor mechanics, they still seem like they're just too self-destructive. I think that they'll figure out a way to fuck up again.
So right, but if you think the Republicans are going to fuck up, where do you think we end up with not Hillary? Is it another Democrat?
Maybe another Democrat. I don't know, because I don't, you know, especially now that she came out on this tour. I thought people would be far more enthused about her. And the reality is that the reception she's gotten is lukewarm. Shit.
Yeah.
At best.
Yeah, they're sort of the core group of excited people, but it's you don't even see like you're not seeing what you saw during the 2008 campaign.
No, not at all. And let's face it, when Obama was out, like at this time period, or any of the candidates that I recall were for either – I mean, they certainly got a hell of a lot better reception than what fucking Hillary has gotten. And you know, now look.
So
approval ratings.
Given this,
ebb and flow.
Yeah, I mean, and her approval has been going down in the last few months.
Yeah.
So do you think what happens here is that she starts to show vulnerability and Democrats smell blood in the water and one of the Democrats who's been waiting in the wings says, "Fuck it, I'm challenging Hillary."
Yeah, I think so, yes.
And you remember my prediction from last, when we did the prediction shows, was that by the end of this year, there would be at least one Hillary alternative in the race. And not necessarily that they'd be ahead, but at least one Hillary alternative would be sort of seriously being talked about. Not ahead, necessarily.
Now, I haven't heard anybody yet, I will say.
But there are lots of names out there, but so far...
But nobody has been like out like saying, "Hey, you know, I'm pounding my chest. I'm planning on going out."
The only person who was even remotely like that, it was Brian Schweitzer. And apparently, I saw some things going by on Twitter even while we were recording this that, you know, he's apparently made it clear he's not going to do it.
Hmm. And of course, the Republicans keep trying to draft Jeb Bush, but then, you know, one of the things that, you know, people are saying is like, wait a minute, you know, the a lot of the reasons why they're saying like Cantor and some of the people are getting killed is because immigration, this other thing about
Bush's weak on.
School standards, other stuff, or whatever shit that the far right is all against, and I'm just
and
like
Bush
okay,
is all over those issues.
Bush is all over those. So how the hell, you know?
Well, and on the Democratic side, I mean, you know, the people we got Warren, we got Warner, Schweitzer, Klobuchar. I'm just listing people that have actually been in polls. Hickenlooper, Cuomo, and of course our boy Joe Biden.
Yeah,
and Joe Biden wants it.
I don't think Joe's gonna run.
I don't,
he's too old.
He is. You know, we had a big argument about this a few months ago.
But I think I've changed my mind. He's not going to do it.
All of these guys right now, I think every single person
plus you want to talk about Mr. Gaffe Prone, for God's sakes. You imagine that. I mean, now what a hilarious campaign that would be.
Joe Biden would be very amusing, but
oh my God!
You know, and look, I've liked Joe Biden since he was running in the '80s. So.
I like Joe Biden. Don't get me wrong. What I'm saying is, as a candidate, I mean, he'd be a train wreck.
Yes, you know that's what you know. If the Democrats want to lose, nominate Joe Biden. I think every single one of these candidates is basically waiting to see what Hillary does. But in addition to what does Hillary does, the other possibility here is that Hillary starts showing weakness when she's going out and starting to do these things,
which she's doing right now, which is why that's the one thing why this week I was like, you know, my percentage all of a sudden, I was far more optimistic a few months back about Hillary's chances. But then I saw this tour come out and how bad it's going. And I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, this is bad.
Yeah, you're starting to make me want to lower from 60 down to like 55 or something. But I still give her an advantage.
I know you. I mean, I
want to be clear. Even 60, 40. I mean, 40% is a significant chance you lose.
I'm with you.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's just I saw all the news about how bad it went for Hillary.
I mean, how she's talking about how she was broke when she left the White House.
Well, I know they were broke because
they had a negative net worth when they left the White House
because of how much they owed.
But they were never in freaking trouble. Yeah, they were never worried about where they were going to get their next meal.
Well, I'm sure that they had to scramble to a certain extent. I mean, but it wasn't exactly. You weren't.
Yeah, they had to scramble by agreeing to do a couple speeches for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on, it's like me, like you know, after the stock market crash. I mean, I my net worth may have gone to negative, but let's face it, I wasn't fucking like trying to figure out where the fuck I was getting my next meal. All right, yeah, I'm with you. I gotcha.
And, anyway, and there are all kinds of little things like that. I mean, you know, we talked a few, like a couple months ago when Monica Lewinsky's article came out that said how she could immediately diffuse that issue by when she was asked about it in an interview, actually looking at the camera and saying, I apologize, Monica. I'm sorry for how we treated you.
She could have gone over there and given her a hug.
She was asked that exact question by Diane Sawyer.
And what did she say?
She got all cold and huffy and basically said, you know, I hope she finds a way to get on with her life.
That's it?
Something along, I mean, she took like 2 minutes to say it, but something along those lines, yeah.
Not very good.
I mean, and it's like, this is the kind of thing where, okay, you could have a slam dunk there and look like you were coming out ahead on everything, and instead you look like you're still bothered and petty about what's happening in the 90s, you know. And maybe she is, but you know, like the way to diffuse that issue is to rise above it, and she wasn't rising above it. And you know, and a bunch of other things like that. I think she's similarly, like, on the Benghazi stuff, you know, as much as I think that's a fake issue, like the place where we screwed up in Benghazi is going into Libya in the first place. And yes, she probably screwed up in terms of, you know, putting security in the right places and all. But she was very defensive and all about, like, well, you know, that never reached my desk and blah, blah, blah. And when she was asked, is there anything you wish you could have done differently? She couldn't come up with anything. You know, she did say, you know, of course, I wish it hadn't happened, but she couldn't come up and say, you know, I wish that I had gotten more involved in XYZ so that we could have seen this coming. She couldn't do that. And yeah, I agree. All of these are signs of potential weakness. Now, there are two ways to look at this. And like I said, one is, you know, you get all this stuff out of the way early. You realize what you're doing wrong. You course correct long before most people are paying attention. So that by the time we get to the end of 2015, the beginning of 2016, she's running on all cylinders, and she's worked out all of these kinks. The other is she starts showing lots of these signs of weakness, and maybe the other Democrats decide they shouldn't wait it out after all.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if I were me, I'd take this right now and I'd fucking pounce. If I were considering, that's what I think.
Okay. Let's take a quick break and then come back with a couple quick words about Apple, and then we'll wrap it up. Back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, Yvonne, I talked a bit about Apple with John last week, but...
I got an iPad Air.
You got an iPad Air. What do you think?
Well, I don't know if you saw on... aside from me being thrown out of my house and all that stuff and whatever...
You broke your iPad.
I did not break my iPad. My wife broke my iPad. All right?
Yeah, yeah. It's still your fault for letting her touch it.
Yep. She took the iPad and put it on top of the washer.
Yep.
In the laundry room. Don't ask me what the fuck she was doing with it in the laundry room. And she put it on top of the washer, and when it hit the spin cycle...
It vibrated its way off the edge.
Yeah.
Hey, well, you know, one of the Kindles I had at one point met its end when I put it on the roof of my car and drove away.
Well, I never saw
it again. I just know it didn't make it to the other end of my drive.
Well, I had a friend of mine who had an iPhone, and he has a car with Bluetooth, right? And so he goes and he... All of a sudden, he gets in the car, pulls out of his place, and drives away. And all of a sudden, his display on the car reads Bluetooth link lost. He's like, Bluetooth link lost? What the fuck? I'm driving. How the hell did I lose a Bluetooth link? Then he realized he left the phone under the roof of his car. So he drove off. It flew off the car. So he drove back and found it. It was quite the screen. Actually, it was an iPhone. He said the screen was cracked, but it still worked.
Well, you know, I'll add you to that. One of the first iPhones we got Amy back several years ago. So it was the iPhone 3G. She had it in a case. The same thing happened. She left it on top of the roof when we drove somewhere. We drove around for like half an hour maybe before we realized something was up. We're like, oh crap, the phone. It was still on the roof.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, and it's because it was like in a slightly rubberized case.
So that was the saving grace. Okay.
Yeah. So like, but we were like, hey, it's still there.
Anyway. All right. So I like my I got the iPad. I was gonna buy a mini. I bought the Air instead.
What made you choose that?
My wife wanted the Air.
Okay.
Shoes on.
I will admit that I was tempted to go with the mini.
Yeah, like right now in our household,
no mini car.
We're talking about mini iPads, Alex.
No mini cars.
Mini cars, yes.
Those are cool too.
Mini helicopters and mini trucks.
Mini helicopters and mini everything. Anyway, so like, because I still don't know if I were to get another one today. I'm still torn at this point. Like a year ago, I would have said definitely the little one, definitely the little one. But the bigger one is lighter than it used to be too. So it's like
I know. So that's the reason. So I wound up, you know, I'm pretty happy with the fact that I got the bigger one. I mean, I am using it, by the way. The reason I had planned before my wife destroyed the other iPad. To get one. I wanted to start using it for work, for travel, because I'm traveling a lot, and I realized that with a whole bunch of changes that they've done at the firewall and access to the office, I can get like 95% of the stuff that I need done through an iOS device without needing the stuff on the PC. I have Office 365. I have it on there. I can access most of the resources of the company. There's a couple of things that I can't do. Okay, all right. But most of the stuff I need to do, I can do. And it's just a lot more convenient. So I was thinking, and I thought about buying a...
keyboard?
No. I was thinking about the Mac Air. But the thing is that I wanted to have the tablet.
Right.
But I did buy the keyboard case. Daddy. I did get that.
Did you like it?
Daddy. Yes, I got the Zag Daddy. One. Okay, and it winds up in a very compact Daddy. Package. The battery life Daddy. On the keyboard is quite long. You know, I haven't had to recharge. I mean, I bought it. I haven't plugged Daddy. It into charged up in a while. It's still. I mean, the battery life on the iPad Air is just quite impressive. I mean, I work all day on it. Like, I've been in meetings and stuff or whatever, and by the end of the day, I still have 40% battery life left on.
So, anyway, what do you think of...
Should we take a break?
Yeah, go ahead. We'll take another quick break. Yeah, there are balloons outside the window. There are hot air balloons floating by outside. We'll be right back. Okay, back. So, Yvonne, aside from your new iPad Air, which sounds really cool.
It is quite cool. I'm really excited about this thing. I got to tell you, I got Office, you know, I had gotten Office 365, which I have installed, and having that is really neat. You know, I'm being able to share all my files. I got everywhere all my stuff. I mean, I got my life synchronized. I'm psyched.
And
you know,
and your company allows work documents like that in the cloud.
Yes.
Because a certain place that I know of is very reluctant to have anything like that shared.
And we've had actually discussions about that. They are actually there is no restriction on it at this point that I'm aware of. They are going to roll out an enterprise solution to that. Okay, they've been talking about that. But I mean, like right now, I mean, I'm using my files and doing my stuff. I mean,
And the keyboard, like I've tried it a couple times with my iPad and just a regular Bluetooth keyboard, and it's always seemed awkward and I didn't like it, but I've never tried an actual keyboard case.
The Zag one, almost every one that I tried before sucked. This is a relatively new one. It's the Zag. It's really slick.
Okay. Well.
Okay.
So. Okay. Enough about the specific thing you got. Apple announced a whole lot of shit last 2 weeks ago. Now, any thoughts on any of it?
Well, I mean, I think that what you can see, they really. It seems to me they laid a foundation for quite a lot of different products to either be developed by Apple or developed in conjunction with partners. That's what I got the impression from the announcements. It seemed like they were building integration, home integration. They were launching stuff for health integration, launching stuff for just quite a lot of things. It seemed like a whole bunch of cloud integration. Like this stuff I'm talking about, like right now, for example, when I'm going like right now, it's true. When my browser windows, for example, right now synchronize between my Mac, my iPhone, and other stuff, right?
Yeah, mine.
But they're talking.
Yep, I've gotten that all set up.
But they were talking about going beyond that.
Oh okay? Yeah, like the, right? As the biggest theme that I saw, like I mean, there are all kinds of stuff in all kinds of areas, but the one that like sort of opened my eyes the most was the whole. I forget the buzzword they gave to it, but the whole idea of being able to take any of your Apple devices and basically take what you're working on, seamlessly move it between them.
Yeah,
even to the extent that you're on a phone call on your iPhone, you sit down right at your desk, and now you're on your phone call on your iMac.
Yeah. Yeah. And how you could start, how you could, and one of the things that I thought was interesting, basically I could see a potential for a lot for business, and they did announce a whole bunch of stuff for business, which they hadn't before, especially on the management of devices, okay? But also think about CRM integration, other stuff. Hey, you're running a contact center, you have salespeople, you have whatever. They're talking about integrating phone with app, with this, with that, and all of a sudden you've got people, hey, they're working right there. They can go, oh, they have an application that'll dial calls, boom, 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 connected to their phones, connected to their infrastructure. Everything happens in one integrated, seamless task. I was like, it seemed like very slick what they were rolling out. I mean, I thought that it was across the board. I mean, they just and then all the enterprise tools that they launched in terms of managing. So therefore, in order, because I know a lot of enterprises, I've been in conversations with companies that have been talking about, I was at one place where the key discussion they had, they talked about how they had rolled out a lot of iPads, but they were also purchasing a number of Windows Surface Pros because they were talking about managing them. They were talking about having the image with the software they wanted and so forth and so on, how they manage the devices. And Apple also now just announced a lot of tools that I know that IT managers have been looking for, announced them to be rolled out, for example. So, I mean, I think it's it seemed like a pretty robust announcement. And it seems, I mean, to me, it seemed like the foundation for quite a lot of different products that should be coming down the pike.
Yeah.
That's what it seemed like to me. And they are giving the developers a lead time to go and say, hey, this is what the software kits are. Guys, you better start making this stuff work around this because this is what's coming down the pike.
And I'm excited about both the new iOS and the new macOS. I want them now. Like I'm not going to download any betas or anything crazy like that. But you know, there's a bunch of new features that they shut off, and I'm like, I could use that today. That would help me right now. I would utilize that functionality. But the one thing I noticed though, And I've been putting off replacing my iMac for years because actually after I upgraded to Mavericks, I haven't needed it as much. It was painfully slow before that, but it's actually been much better. I upgraded to Mavericks, opened some disk space up, and I'm not complaining as much. But like, I believe my iMac is too old to take advantage of that transfer between the phone and the computer thing.
Mm.
Because you need the newer Bluetooth standard for that to work.
Ah, I see.
And so, like, I believe I saw something.
How old's your iMac now?
It's like four and a half years old at this point.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's been that long.
Yeah, jeez. It's been that long. And, like, you know, a year ago, I was like, there's no way I can make it through 2013 on this computer. I'm going to have to replace it. And we decided, you know, for budget reasons and everything else, to push that off to 2014. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be so painful to wait to 2014. But then by the time we got to 2014, you know, like I said, with the upgrade to Mavericks and making a bunch of room on my drive by moving a bunch of stuff onto an external drive, all of a sudden it's, you know, every once in a while, it still annoys me, but it's nothing like it was. I mean, it's still an older computer, but for the things I use it for, it's fine. So I'm no longer feeling an urgency that, oh my God, I have to replace it, which means guess what? But, you know, budget-wise, other things are going to win instead of the computer probably this year too, you know, so we'll see. But having operating systems that you can't use all the features, though, that might be the kind of thing that pushes me over the edge. So we finally, obviously you're replacing your whole damn kitchen, but we replaced our refrigerator a couple months ago. The oven died a while ago, and so we replaced that, but the microwave was acting flaky, so we replaced the oven and the microwave at the same time. But the first microwave that arrived came out of the box was dented and damaged, so we sent it back, and it took them another month to get everything back to us. So
a month.
Because it was a special order microwave. I mean, it's just one that's not all that common, so they didn't have it in stock at the local stores, blah, blah, blah. And the oven as well, when they installed the oven, they accidentally dropped something on it, and so they replaced both of them. So we ended up with a new oven and microwave together again.
Oh, God.
Of exactly the same model. So... they actually didn't drop something directly on it. What they did was they put the stove in, and then because the microwave was dented, they didn't put it in, but they took the old microwave, and then that night at 2 a.m, the fume hood fell onto the oven.
Oh my God.
And there was just a little scratch in the finish, but my wife is convinced it started making a little buzzing noise, and it's one of those induction ones. It didn't break the glass.
Yeah, because you guys got the induction.
Okay. It didn't break the glass, but it started making a little weird noise. So she's like, she called them up, and like they didn't like put this, they didn't do it right. This thing fell on it. It's their fault, and so they replaced it.
Well. All right, so there goes our appliance and technology update, like right now,
and we undoubtedly will need a new dishwasher and new washer dryer sometime in the next year. There's just no way the ones that are in place right now will last too much longer. So we know that's coming.
Well, I replaced
everything.
I mean, my dishwasher was new. My microwave, the only thing that I had old that I hadn't replaced was my stove. And, well, I guess I'm getting a new stove because the water killed it.
Yep.
So I did get a new stove, and I guess I got a newer microwave now. The microwave is relatively new. I got a new, I don't know. I've been, well, my dishwasher died. I think I mentioned this. That one died. And I got a new fridge, basically, to be honest, when our baby was born, we just didn't have enough. We needed a bigger fridge. Right. I got a bigger fridge. And I had my dryer die. I've had my appliances at my home that came with a builder were not very good. I mean, I had my dryer die. I had my dishwasher die. I had the microwave die. the only two things that survived really without that were the stove, the refrigerator, and the washer. And the stove got killed by the flood. The refrigerator I replaced because we really needed a big one, bigger one, but that's a really, you know. Yeah, so.
Okay, we should wrap up the show, but I just realized there was one thing that, like, I couldn't give a crap about, but maybe you would. You have anything to say about this whole thing with the Redskins?
Well,
anybody who's not paying attention, there was a legal ruling that said they would not give the Redskins a renewal on their trademark because there'd been too many complaints about it being offensive. And there's been an ongoing controversy about whether they should dump the nickname.
I gotta admit, look, I'm not familiar with how offensive that term is. Okay. I mean, you know how you're certainly familiar with, like, how certain terms are offensive to certain people, for example, yeah. You know, how it impacts. I got to admit that me not having interacted with the community and basically the Washington Redskins being called the Washington Redskins since I can remember, I started hearing rumblings recently in the last couple of years about how the name's offensive, but I had no idea that it was that offensive, to be honest with you. I don't know about you. What your thoughts are on that?
I think it's the same. I've been hearing more about it the last couple of years. It makes perfect sense, though. I mean, if you think about it, what it is, it's like okay, it's a character, it's a caricature and a stereotype of an ethnic minority. I mean, do you really have to say much more than that?
I mean, pick
any other ethnic minority and put a, you know, cartoonized. Stereotyped.
I guess it's like if we had a team called the Miami Gringos. I guess that wouldn't go over well. Probably not. I just had not given it that much thought. The name had been around, used such a long for so long that I guess I hadn't really thought about it that way.
And of course, this ruling does not actually keep them from using that name.
It just means that they have no copyright protection.
It means it's not protected and anybody else can use it too. And anybody else can use their logos and all that other stuff.
Right.
So all of that sort of counterfeit material is perfectly legal now.
Yeah. So that probably basically is almost like going to force them to have to change it.
Well, and I think this has been a building thing anyway, where the number of people who've been saying, you know, maybe that's not quite so cool, has been growing and growing year after year. So at a certain point, they were going to have to do something anyway. The only question is if this pushes them over the edge.
I do think definitely when I saw that today, that newsflash, I thought for sure, you know what, this is going to force them to change it. I don't see how they wouldn't. Because losing that protection certainly deprives them of the ability to stop people from infringing under revenue stream substantially. And I just don't see how they could get around it, I guess.
Okay. And with that, I think we are done.
We're done. We're out.
Thank you, Yvonne. It's good to have you back. And now
next week I may not be in because we'll figure something out next week. I'm traveling next week. I'm going to Atlanta, my flight back is on the night that we typically record.
Okay. So we'll figure something out. We'll talk offline. But it was good to have you back and hopefully all your house stuff gets, you know, fixed sooner rather than later. We are
wanting to get back home so badly.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for joining us as usual. You can email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com. You can contact me on Twitter @abelsmay, or you can contact Yvonne @imbo. All the other usual ways of getting a hold of people. We love hearing from you. In the meantime, tell all your friends to listen and have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.